Hi, book lovers in Bakersfield, Farah and Jasmine here today with very special guests. So we have Lynn Kelly here, who is the author of Song for a Whale, which is our companion title for our one book project. And we are joined by Jenny Kamen, and she is our sign language interpreter for today. So this is the first for us. We've never had a sign language interpreter on our show, so this is kind of cool. So for everybody listening out there, you're going to have to tune in to our Facebook to see how cool this is.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this just because it ties in so well with the themes of your book, Lynn, and I really enjoyed your book quite a bit. But just to get kind of into an introduction for any of our viewers who haven't read the book, we highly encourage that everybody participates. It is a companion title for this year's One Book Project. Our One Book Project this year is focused on the centennial celebration of the 19th Amendment and women's right to vote in the United States. And it's focused on female empowerment, women in the STEM industry, and a whole slew of titles have been chosen to really celebrate those themes. Our primary title is Broadband, which tells the story of the women that helped create the internet. They're pretty much basically the Hidden Figures version of the internet story. And a whole bunch of our companion titles are all focused on various genres, reading levels to get everybody involved, no matter their reading level or reading interest. And so Song for a Whale is actually our children's fiction title. And so we're just really excited. If anybody is interested in participating, go to kclonebook.org. We have the titles available, including Song for a Whale, available in a physical book for checkout, ebook, audiobook, in any sort of format that you need. So go ahead and get started. Sign up for the program in our Beanstack app and join events. We're really wanting to open up the discussion this year. It may not be happening in person, but virtually we have a fantastic lineup.
Yeah, most definitely. I'm so excited about these titles, and I think this is the year that I'm going to read every single title because they are so good. And I believe I only have 3 more books to go. And I have until November, right?
Yeah, you have until November. So you have plenty of time. Anybody jumping in right now and hearing about the One Book Project for the first time, you still have lots of time to join the discussion. There is never a too late day to read up and join.
So the Song for a Whale, it's really cool because I just saw that it is also on the Battle of the Books list too, Lynn. So that's
exciting. I just found that out too. Yes, that was exciting.
It's so hard to keep on the shelf here at the library.
Okay, well that's good news.
Yeah, it's so hard to keep, especially the at Beale. It's like we have so many requests for it. And so it's exciting to see that it just keeps getting checked out. Like as soon as it comes back in, it's going to the next person. So Lynn, do you want to tell us some like background information, like a summary? I almost want to know like what inspired you to write something like this?
Sure. The idea came to me really after I found out that this lonely whale exists. So the whale in this story is based on a real whale, and the one in the book is fictionalized to the 55 hertz whale. In real life, it's the 52 hertz whale, and I found out about this whale that swims around singing his own language because he sings at a frequency too high for other whales to understand, probably, because it should be more like 10 to 20 hertz frequency. And it's to us humans, it's a low sound. It's a low note of a tuba, but for a whale, that's so high it's not even understandable. So it's that different. And he's been around since the late 80s that we know of, maybe longer. But that's the first time someone detected this song and realized it is a whale song, but it's really weird. And it has some characteristics of a blue whale song. It has characteristics of a fin whale song. So one idea is that maybe he's a hybrid. Maybe he has a parent of each of those species. And that could be why he sings an unusual song. Could be something else about him, if he has a different body shape or something else about him. Again, we could compare that to a musical instrument. You know, if they're cracked or bent or misshapen, then the song they produce will be different. So it could be something like that. That's one of those questions that's probably impossible to answer, but I like wondering about. And then when I found out about this whale, I kept thinking about him and read all that I could, and found that this is all we know. It's only because of these underwater microphones in the world's oceans, that's how we know that he exists. No one has seen him in real life. We don't have any pictures or video. We just know that it is a whale, and he sings a song like no other. So I knew pretty quickly this was an idea that wasn't going to let me go. So I had to start writing. I didn't know yet what the story would be, but I started writing down some ideas about it. And so led into the story all because of this whale. And then I had to come up with a character who's going to be not just fascinated like I was, but of course a character who's going to get up and do something. Because, you know, we need our character to go on some kind of journey and not just, you know, look on the internet and read about him like I was. So someone who would go on this journey and reach out to him for some reason. So I came up with the character Iris, and I thought of her as being a kid like many that I had worked with as a sign language interpreter. It's the experience of a lot of deaf people that they are one of a few deaf students in school, sometimes the only deaf student in school, which should be a very isolating existence. And so I feel like Iris is someone who, when she learns about this whale in her science class, she's feeling a connection right away and knows, yeah, I understand that song that he's singing. So she feels like they have that similar life in that way, and that they're not alone. They are surrounded by others like them, but nothing that they can communicate with. So we know that she feels that connection right away. And she's a very strong and determined girl. She's creative. She's a good problem solver. And so she decides she has to do something to reach out for him and let him know that someone does hear him in a way.
That is a beautiful, it's such a beautiful story. I really enjoyed your book a lot. I really connected with the character, and I could see right away how you must have connected with this whale. Because as soon as you started talking about it in the book, I was really interested in this concept too. And I've never been one to be particularly interested in whales. I remember being younger and going on whale sightseeing trips and never really enjoying it, in all honesty. But suddenly this idea that there would be a whale that would be alone like that, in that type of isolation, and knowing that you wrote about this whale based on an actual whale that actually exists, was really interesting, gave a lot of insight. And I thought it was a very wonderful way for people to also identify with the main character in the book. So I really enjoyed that aspect quite a bit. Have you always been interested in whales, or did it just kind of like you found out about him and then it made you interested?
I've always loved animals, and I've always been interested in ocean life. So that's probably why when I saw something, you know, on Twitter, you know, fly by about this whale, and I scrolled back to see what was that. So thankfully I did. It was just, turns out a stock photo of a whale, of course not about this particular one, and had a lengthy, pretty melodramatic caption about this whale who has no friends or family and sings this song year after year, decade after decade, that nothing is ever going to answer back. So that's where it started. And so without that interest in animals, I would have just let that, you know, scroll by without checking what was that. So, and then a couple weeks after I started writing this, I saw an announcement about the need for a sign language interpreter to go on an Alaskan cruise to work for a week for a deaf couple taking the cruise. And it was about 2 weeks away. And, you know, you'd normally want more time to prepare for a trip like that, but I thought I'd have to take that. This seems meant to be. I can't let that go. So I did take it, and it was a lovely time to be away from Houston, like the end of July, early August, when it's about 100 degrees every day. It's nice to sail past some glaciers around that time. So it was my job for a week, but really didn't feel like hard work. Yes, I'll interpret your whale watch. You know, I guess I have to, you know, do your scenic train ride with you. So anything, any job that I did during that week is something I wanted to do anyway. I would have done on my own anyway if I'd been there. So I did that. It was my job for a week, but I also got to do some of the book research early on and got to see what were these sites my characters would be seeing and what's it like to be that close to a glacier and to see whales jumping up next to the ship. So I hadn't seen that before. I hadn't been on a whale watch before. So I got to see that from the cruise ship too. So not even a separate whale watch was necessary to see them because they were, you know, jumping around right near the cruise ship. And then to see the ship itself and what's it like to be on this for this time. Because I knew by then my character would have to get away from Houston. She's not going to see that whale anywhere around here. So he's on the Pacific coast. And I had thought, probably she'll be on a cruise ship. Maybe that's how she'll get close to him. And so I could see what's the ship like and who are all these people who work here and the cabins and the dining rooms, what are those like? So it really helped inform the setting details early on. And then a year later, I got to do that again, a different route so I could see different sites and stop in some different towns and see where would my characters go when it stops. And by then I was revising. So I took about a year from idea to draft that was about ready to send to others. It was getting suitable for other people to look at. And so then that helped me hammer down some of the details I needed for the revision. By then I knew what questions I needed to ask that I still had to figure out in the story. Some that probably were should have been of concern to the crew, like, hey, if a 12-year-old leaves the ship in a port and just doesn't come back, I mean, would you guys leave or would you have to wait? And they're going, yeah, we have to wait. I did tell them I'm a writer, so I'm going to have odd questions. So and I guess they believed me and didn't think I was planning to abandon a child or anything, but no, if it's us, they will leave. But for a child, just so you know, they do have to stay and wait. So I had Iris doing a little too much on her own in that earlier draft. So it works better with Grandma as a co-conspirator along the trip.
Yeah, that is a pretty crazy trip for her to go on in the first place. And I definitely think that having her grandma in on it makes a big difference. And I also, you know, kind of side note, you know, obviously the main story is about Iris and it's about, you know, the whale and everything, but I really enjoyed the grandmother character. I was really identifying with her kind of want to be free and to like go on adventures again. And that whole idea, the whole like bonding experience aspect of it was, you know, I know it's not like the primary storyline, it's more about Iris, but that side storyline was something as an adult I enjoyed reading in the book. So just my thoughts on that.
Oh, thank you. Grandma wasn't as strong a character in the earlier draft either. I knew that she would be grieving and not quite herself, but there was too much of that early on. And so it ended up being Grandma just sort of being there along for the ride because Iris needed an adult with her to get onto a plane and then a cruise ship. And I did that too because we do want our characters to be the ones solving their problem, but realistically, it was too much in that way also. And so I think it was my editor who said, well, one, let's have her not commit a felony first, because they're, yeah, okay, yes, she did use Grandpa's credit card for all this, but I think it's okay if she intends to pay it back. And no, really, let's not have her, let's not have her take anyone's credit card without permission. A few things that were probably crimes that she did. And just realistically, it was too much for her to accomplish on her own. But mainly, Grandma is stronger if she's one who, yes, she's grieving and she has that to work through, but then she's the one to say, yeah, we need to do this trip, let's do it, when Iris has the plan but it's not working out and she's kind of venting to Grandma about it not working out, and then Grandma's the one to say, yeah, let's go, let's make it happen.
What do you feel? I was really interested in the mother's perspective. You know, the beginning of the story is very set up as Iris, you know, feels very isolated in school, and the people around her are trying to communicate with her, but obviously it's not at the level that she's feeling comfortable with, and they're trying, but it's just not really working, and she's obviously feeling lonely, and as she tries to, like, reach out to her mom, her mom, to a degree, shuts that down. I felt like there was moments where she wanted her daughter to experience things the way she experienced things, and then I also felt like she wasn't necessarily trying to be insensitive, but there was moments where it was, and I was just very interested in the mother character as well, just because Iris's perspective, I mean, she's a kid, and she doesn't really have a lot of choice in this matter, and you really could feel that throughout the storyline, especially, like, you know, when she has the moment with her father, and she's telling her father, I don't really want to be translated for anymore, like, you have to speak to me. It was just very interesting. What was it like getting in the head of both the isolation of Iris while at school, but also the mother's, you know, want to give her the best life she can, but not fully being able to always relate to the experiences that her daughter is experiencing.
Right. And Iris is fortunate in that she's someone who does have a mom who's fluent in sign language. And that's not the experience of most deaf people. And I did that for a few reasons, but I wanted, for one, to show that difference the language acquisition make, or the language access makes, from school having almost no one to talk to, at home having some family members who sign well but are not deaf, so don't share that experience. And then what a contrast when she's with grandma, who of course signs fluently and has the experience of being a deaf person, and she understands her. And mainly I did that because it will show readers who I know most are not familiar with deafness or sign language, it would show that this is a very satisfying part of her life where she experiences joy when she's with her grandmother and can communicate fluently with her and has someone who understands her experience. I didn't want anyone to come away with the impression that she wishes that she could hear. And I could see how if I gave her no one to talk to at school and nobody to talk to at home, it would be natural to assume that this is a sad life she has, and of course she wishes she could hear, when that's not the experience of most, maybe I could say all, or almost all deaf people I've known, despite there being challenges and frustrations there because of the lack of communication access and not enough people they can communicate with well, they don't wish that they could change that part of themselves. They don't wish that they could hear. So this is part of their identity usually, and their culture is tied to this, and they have their language and they have their friends they have very strong bonds with. So that was important to show what a difference it makes when she can be with someone who knows her experience and her language. Gives us an idea of what her life could be like if she could go to a school that has a lot more deaf people, which is what she wants. And then she could be around people who can communicate with her easily all day long. And I think we went into this because your question was about her mom. And mom has her own fears she needs to face. And we see a little bit of that near the end when grandma challenges her about that. But I mentioned the strong friendships that deaf people have within the deaf community. That does happen often, and it's natural that they would have a stronger bond with another deaf person than they do with their own family members who are not deaf and often don't know sign language very well. And I know mom in the story has seen that through her own parents, and she, you know, growing up would have felt like they were closer to their deaf friends than they were perhaps to her. And so that's a fear that mom has. And I don't think that's one that she has said out loud or admitted to herself perhaps, but she has that fear that if she lets Iris go interact with more deaf people, she'll feel like she's losing her in a way, that she's going to be around them. And it's of course, it would strike us as selfish, but I think for her, it's she would probably say that it is too, but it's a natural response, I think, if you feel like you don't want to let go of someone. And to her, it would feel like she's losing her to all these other people that she would develop strong friendships with.
Yeah, I think that's such a natural feeling normally with a mother and their child. But I think with communication, that's a whole nother element. And I think that it's nice to see in a children's book that her mother is very clearly a good mother. She comes from a very clearly loving family. But at the same time, her mother is human. And like you said, hasn't fully dealt with some of those feelings. And it motivates partially her actions and how she is raising her daughter. And so I think that was a really nice thread as an adult reader, but also as an introduction to younger audiences that nobody is perfect. People are human, you know? And so I think that was just a nice subtle way to introduce that concept. What made you decide that you wanted to introduce the culture to audiences in your book? Like I felt like it was such a good introduction to the deaf culture and just like helping people understand more. And there was a lot of good explanation, and I knew some of the things, but I didn't know all the things in the book when I read it, but I felt like it was just a very good introduction and it was very tailored to younger audiences.
Oh, thank you. That came up really because of who I envisioned the character as being. I knew Iris would be someone who would feel a connection to this lonely whale that she learned about. And they would have that sort of parallel experience being not alone yet isolated. So that's why I made her a deaf character, because I know that's the experience of many people. And then naturally to introduce the culture. And I think in any book, we can only introduce any culture we write about, in a novel anyway. So we, like you mentioned, we learn some things about it, but it is a lot of it at the surface, and there's so much deeper knowledge someone can gain about any culture. And I wanted to show that there is diversity within a culture too. In any culture, individuals are not all the same. So we see a variety of experiences, and we see with Iris and her friend Wendell, they're different, and the way they communicate, the way they sign is different. There are some deaf people who don't sign. Some sign and speak, some prefer to sign only, so there is some diversity within the culture too. So I tried to show a little of that variety. Wendell is like most deaf kids. He's in a family that never knew a deaf person before he was born. He is fortunate to have parents who decided to learn sign language well when he was born. So there are all kinds of experiences people have even within that culture. So I wanted to show some of that. And then again, to show too that this is something that she values as a deaf person. And she is a strong and proud deaf girl and is taking on this journey. And she has challenges and frustrations, as I mentioned, but this is something she values, that is her identity. So I wanted to show that too, that this is a culture like any other and has a language that is as rich as any other, with its own history and jokes and their stories they can tell and their figures of speech. So it is a rich language too. So I wanted to have that in there also, and still do that in a concise way in the space that we have in a novel to tell that story.
I was very interested in the way that the whole situation with her pushing Nina was handled by the school. I'm in my mind, I'm thinking like, what? No, why didn't they like talk to, like both parties and just be like, what happened? Why did you know what I mean? I just thought it was so unfair, because I know it's a zero tolerance policy, but there are circumstances that, and it wasn't like she meant to do it. So I was really really intrigued by the way that the school handled the situation. without like talking to both of them to see, because I feel like that, you know, like if they had talked about it, it would have been probably resolved like differently than it was. But I mean, I see kind of like where, you know, how it was, it's one of those like long-term problems that we're trying to like, do you get what I'm saying? Like, I just feel like, yeah. So I was like, wait, why did the school do that?
She probably shouldn't have shoved her so hard, and yeah. I know a lot of people think she also should have been nicer to Nina, which maybe that's true, but also that would be super annoying to have her right, you know, literally hands in her face every day when she
doesn't understand her.
So I get that frustration. You know, what happens often too with a deaf student is when others around her don't sign. Mm-hmm. Who gets to tell their side of the story first? It's the kid who can hear and who can tell everyone what happened. And then her side of the story will come later when they can sit down with her and an interpreter and find out what happened. So yeah. I do think they talked to Nina, maybe called her parents, but that wasn't on the page. But Iris wasn't around for that or wouldn't have known that.
They
addressed it. But they were being a little strict about the zero tolerance, and I think Nina has a mom who would have you know, called the school and probably shouted at somebody about her child being hurt, and so they had to give her some kind of consequence. It does seem unfair that happens though too, and added to her frustration there. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to show something that would happen there too to really drive home that this is not where she feels comfortable. This is not where she's her best. And then how different it is when she's in her room and we mm-hmm. see her surrounded by what looks like to anyone else just piles of junk. But to her, mm-hmm. this is home when she's, you know, elbow deep in a radio from the 1940s mm-hmm. that she's working on. So not so much at school.
Yeah, no, but the situation was just felt so realistic to me, like that this does happen or this can happen, right. And how like you know, school should like learn from it and students should learn from it. So I was really excited about how realistic the situation was in order to, it was almost like a like something that I didn't think about, but it was like a learning light for me, you know, where the light turns on and I was like, oh, that makes sense. So I was really excited about how realistic it made the situation feel like.
And yeah, and it was annoying in its unfairness, but mm-hmm. I think that kind of thing happens when mm-hmm. it has to wait to tell the other side of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like Farrah was saying, the idea that like the light going off in your head, I hadn't thought about that either, is that, you know, if somebody's kind of getting in your face and for a language that's more physical, mm-hmm. she's intruding upon her space, and she's not intending to do that, of course, but just because your intention is something doesn't mean that you're not coming off a certain way, especially since there is the communication there. And so I see why she reacted that way. I feel like that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But then it also is a reminder that sometimes we're in situations where things aren't really fair, and mm-hmm. that is just kind of the way the world is. And so I appreciate what you're saying, Farrah, about how it felt like a really realistic situation, and it felt unfair because you're in her perspective, knowing she didn't do, maybe she overreacted, but her feelings were valid, you know? And I completely get where you're coming from, Farrah.
Yeah. But I was excited about Iris's character because I haven't read anything in a while, or maybe in forever, I can't even remember, about a main character who, first of all, has to overcome this like loneliness, and you know, she is deaf, but she does something even more exciting. She puts stuff together to recreate like radios. So like, how did that idea even come like past you? Because like, this is something cool. Very rarely do we see young girls with a hobby like this. Like, you know, some say like, oh, you know, getting on the computer or, you know, we were with Brittany Morris, the author of Slay, and she talked about her main character was a teenager and was doing, like made a whole game out of like computer coding and stuff like that. So how did you come by this idea that I want Iris to put old radio parts together and make like radio, like vintage radios?
Yes, the character Iris isn't made up of only one person I've known. She's she has qualities of many, many deaf students that I've known who were smart and strong and funny and also just trying to get through the school day and overcome a lot of challenges throughout the day. That skill, though, is inspired by one person. There was a deaf student I worked with as a college student from his freshman orientation day until his graduation day. He's now an electrical engineer, which makes sense.
Oh, wow.
Right, and I was with him through his whole college career. And he said that he'd been that kid who could fix anything. And at 12 years old was fixing someone's, you know, antique radios from the 1930s to 1950s. And the old tube TVs, he could fix those.
Oh, wow.
Could build a computer out of old parts. And so just has this as a hobby. So I thought, that's an intriguing skill. That's really interesting for anyone, especially a kid, and especially a deaf kid who cannot hear the song or program that's going to play once this thing is fixed. But he knows what an electrical circuit looks like. He knows what parts go where and what is wired to what and what parts are no good anymore and need replacing. And he just enjoys fixing things. And he's one of those people you can call whenever anything needs repairing. He'll either know how to do it or he'll figure it out. So really, I gave that to Iris at first because I thought that's an interesting skill. And it's a way that we can see that she's intelligent and she's creative and she can solve problems. Because at school, it's hard for people to see that when they can't talk to her, really. Yes, she's doing her work, but without anyone communicating with her so much, that it's hard to see that she is that smart. And so when we see her at home, and she has this unusual skill, and she's obviously smart, and she likes figuring things out. Also doesn't like it leaving anything broken. Mm-hmm. And that's something she has to face that her brother challenges her with if she's kind of treating the whale like he's something broken, and that's why she's going after him to try to fix him. So she'll have to face that too and ask, is that actually what she's doing? So I gave it to her at first because it's an interesting skill, and it shows us what she's like when she's working on those. And I didn't know at first how it would become important in her solving the problem later on. Mm-hmm. So that worked out well later. And it's a good tie-in too with the whale's song, you know, being different from others and how she does work with these things that produce sound, and it doesn't matter to her that she can't hear them. She doesn't care about that, just wants to work with electronics and fix things. And so I thought it was a good tie-in too with the way the whale's song is important. And to her, it doesn't matter that she can't hear the song, but you know, knows that to him, that's his communication. So that's important.
I think that element, it's so interesting to hear that you started out without it necessarily connecting and that it very organically and naturally happened. But it's such a reminder that, you know, sound can be interpreted differently, and her interpretation of sound as she's working with it, as she's fixing the radios and working with tubing and everything, and at the same time trying to fix this problem that has to do with sound. It's just interesting, the different interpretations of sounds and words. I particularly really enjoyed I forget exactly how it was described because it was described so fluidly, but when she would do almost the wordplay with her grandfather and how the words of the sign language ended up creating wordplay. It sounded very visual and very beautiful. And it was almost like a song And that theme obviously runs through the whole story and all the different little elements. But it's such a reminder that sound is how we interpret it and the different interpretations of it, and how it often made me also think about how people I'd known also in college, how sound is also feeling. So she talks about that, you know, she feels the sound, and it's different than the way I may interpret it, but it's still valid and interesting, and it's definitely a different way of looking at the world. So I really enjoyed that theme intersecting. So it definitely really strikes me as interesting that you chose that, because it was interesting, not necessarily for the very specific reason, but it reminds you how writing is very organic. You know, things kind of fall into place the way they're meant to, because the story felt that way too. Like, it made sense for her to follow this whale and try to fix this problem, and that's her personality. But, I mean, you can't help as a reader going, but at the same time, she can't hear the radio. So it is just interesting that that's more a quirk of her personality, that she wants to fix things. And I just appreciated that element often when I'm talking about books, I go on tangents. Yeah, I just appreciated that element. So it's cool to hear that it was more an interesting trait. It wasn't necessarily because of her being deaf. So, yeah.
Right. And then, and something she has to face too, that it does tie into that in her search for the whale, and comparing it to these, old electronics she can't stand to leave sitting broken. She does have to face that. She dismisses her brother when he brings up, are you after this whale because you feel like he needs to be fixed? And maybe he doesn't. And then later she has to face that. Is that why I'm here? Is that why I'm going after him? And does this whale really need Iris to tell him she hears this song? Probably not. But in a story, we usually have the outer journey or the plot, and then we have what's going on inside the character. Mm-hmm. So we have that physical journey, from here in Houston to the Pacific Coast. But then what's going on with Iris? It's really, she needs to stand up for herself. Mm-hmm. And she's given up on that. She's the one who needs to, insist to her mom and bring up the subject again, that she really needs to be in a place where there are other students she can talk to and teachers she can talk to and learn from. And she's given up on standing up for herself, though she is a strong person. But don't we do that too as adults? It's easier to stand up for someone else, I think, than to advocate for ourselves often.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's always easier because, I mean, you're able to go and point out something's wrong. When it's for you, it's always like a more personal, it feels like such a bigger hurdle. Something struck me that you said, you mentioned that you were an interpreter for somebody that went all the way through orientation to graduation. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about how those experiences affected the writing of your book. But not just that, the idea that you'd be following somebody along for that many years. I mean, I would garner that there would be friendship involved at that point after that many years spent together. And I felt like that was almost reflected in her relationship with her interpreter at school.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. And there are some who would probably say, he should be totally professional. And we are here as interpreters, and we are here to interpret, and that's it. Yes, we are, but you are a person also. And if you're like, he'd been working with this kid for years. So, and I had too, I had, younger students like elementary school who I'd known for years. So you're going to have conversations that aren't, part of the interpreting process. We're not just robots who show up and sign and then leave. So, there is a professional boundary you don't cross, but it's natural to have somewhat of a friendship, or you at least have conversations with people you're working with for that amount of time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think you explained that beautifully. Do we want to jump in to talk about what we're reading, Farah?
Yes, I'm excited. This is my favorite part. Like every week, I always am excited to write things to my ever-growing list to read, but I really like all the watching stuff. So I'm not like a big TV watcher, so I like when you guys recommend, like when everybody recommends, like, oh, what should I watch? So I'm excited about it. We should start. Who wants to go first?
I mean, I'll go first. I'll go first because my list is long, and hopefully I can go through this quickly. I love hearing also what everybody's reading, watching, because, you know, often we talk about the work that we read, or we talk about, an author's, you know, background or what made them influenced by the story. But I love hearing what authors are reading, just because, mm-hmm. you know, obviously that's going to shape your life experiences, but then and translates into what you're writing. So it's always an exciting segment. So I had to write a list this week, Farah, because my list was so long. It was
kind of funny. Mine's very short.
Well, I'll make up for your normal long list, frankly. So I'm going to start with my books. So the first book that I am reading is, and I feel like I'm going to butcher this word. I have no idea if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but Scythe?
I think it's Scythe.
You think it's Scythe?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever said the word out loud in all. So let's see if I can get it on the camera. So you can kind of see the cover. Scythe, whatever it is, by Neil Schusterman. It is a YA novel about a future world that no longer, everybody's immortal. So at this point, there's kind of like a whole computer system that manages all of society's needs. People work, but they don't have a lot of meaning. Life, they go and they live hundreds of years. But there's this whole segment of the population that is, they're basically the equivalent of reapers, and they glean is what they call it. They glean people to make sure that there isn't overpopulation on the earth. So people will live hundreds of years, and then they'll run into basically a reaper type of character that ends their life. And I became interested in this book many, many months ago, mm-hmm. but for some reason I could not locate this book anywhere. It is on Hoopla, but it is in a different language. And I just could not locate this book. And so I had requested it, and it finally came in. And so I jumped on it immediately because I knew it was going to be very difficult to recheck this book out. I think if it's not a trilogy, it's a duology. So mm-hmm. far, it's very interesting. It's not my favorite YA book I've ever read, but I'm also still kind of like in the portion of kind of like the midway point where the plot's mm-hmm. building up. But basically, it's about these two teenagers who are selected to be apprentices of one of the scythes. They call them scythes in this instead of reapers, but in one of the scythes. And they are taken in by somebody who's got a lot of values. They're very ethical, follows all of the rules. And then they are kind of pitted against each other and have to go into a competition. And so now they're trying to kind of survive. I don't know. It's kind of got this dystopian utopia feel to it. It's very interesting, very convoluted, but I'm into sci-fi, so I'm enjoying it. That is the first book I am reading. The second book I am reading is Lovecraft Country. I am totally reading that because I watched the show on HBO and I didn't realize it was based off of a book that actually existed. I knew that obviously Lovecraft is an author, and I knew that there was influences in that region, but I did not realize there was an actual book called Lovecraft Country that the storyline of the show is based off of. And so I watched the show, fell in love, super interesting. It's connected to J.J. Abrams and Jordan Peele. So a lot of horror undertones, very dark, creepy, very enjoyable, fantastic storytelling. And then when I found out there was a book, I was like, I have to read this, and I have to read this now. So I'm reading that at the same time as watching the show. I'm definitely interested in hearing anybody's opinions on that in our comments below. I'm also reading this little kid's kind of easy reader comic book. It's Plants vs. Zombies, Better Homes and Gardens with, like, you know, like you're guarding something, gardens. I'm sorry, I couldn't get over that word play. It's so silly. I literally just checked this out because my daughter's obsessed with Plants vs. Zombies on the phone. And I was like, let's read this together. So we are currently reading this. We're about halfway through and she's enjoying it a lot. So if you've got kids that are enjoying this game or you like this game, it's cute. It's a fun little comic book read. And then the last book I read was a children's book, Christopher Pumpkin. It's really cute. It's about how this witch decides to throw a Halloween party, a scary Halloween party, and she doesn't want to do the work. So she brings these pumpkins to life, all these scary pumpkins. And then she also brings to life Christopher Pumpkin, who likes pink and having fun and doesn't like scary things. And so it's super cute because he's upsetting them the whole time because he doesn't want spider webs or anything like that. I personally picked it out because Halloween's coming up, and then my husband's name is Christopher, and I knew my daughter would get very excited about that, which I was right. But it's a really cute book. It's a fun little Halloween one, and I enjoyed it a lot. So those are the books I am reading. I'm still listening to Reaper at the Gates, that YA novel in the An Ember in the Ashes trilogy. I keep kind of coming back to that one because it's a really long read. That is like a 16-hour book to listen to. So I keep having to pause, move on, come back. But I'm enjoying it. It's really interesting. I'm also still listening to the Hamilton soundtrack. I think it's officially been 6 weeks straight that I have listened to the Hamilton soundtrack. I thought I'd be over it by now, and I'm still not. I don't listen to any other music. So obviously, I can tell Lynn may also have the same obsession. Did you like it?
I love Hamilton. I could listen to it every day. I could watch it every day. I was wondering, do you have to skip through a couple songs when you're driving and listening to it so you're not crying in the car?
No, I think I've listened to it so much that I don't cry. I do find that I've got an obsession with the latter half of each act for some reason. Like, Helpless onwards in the first act, and then I can't remember where it is in the second act, but like the second half, like once I get over kind of the hump of the storyline, I get really excited about those build up to the ends of the acts for some reason, and I don't want to listen to the first half of the soundtrack on each part. So
weird. I might also like Hadestown. I think I like that as much as I like Hamilton.
Hadestown?
Yeah.
What's that about?
Oh, it's, how would I describe it? I guess like if the Greek gods all lived in New Orleans. So that's the flavor of music you'll get from it. You can see a couple of the videos from that online. If you look up the Tony Awards, I know they did a performance there, so you can see them. And they've been on some of the talk shows, like they did a performance on the Today Show and some of the other morning talk shows. So a couple of the performances you can see, if you can check on YouTube and find those. So check out that soundtrack. I think you'd like it also.
Yeah.
Yes, Hamilton, I love to. I saw someone post something that said, who needs Broadway when every ride in the car is a performance of Hamilton, starring me as everybody. That's a little called out, yeah. But true. Yeah.
I'll have to check that out because, like, I've always liked Broadway, but I haven't been obsessed with Broadway per se. And I can definitely understand people's obsession with Hamilton now. Like, I didn't get it before. I kind of had ignored it. And then once I watched it on Disney, like, I can't get over it. Now it's all about Broadway. Even my husband, who's always like, I hate Broadway, won't, like, you know, there's a good skit on YouTube about how people just break out in Hamilton song, and I'm like, that's literally my life now. I just break out in Hamilton song every like few minutes, and my husband does the same thing, and I just feel like so silly, but I can't help it. It's so good. It's just so good. And I normally, you know, you get burnt out listening to something, but I haven't seemed to got to that point yet, and I listen to it almost every day. Yeah. I've stopped listening to other music, so
you hear different things every time.
Yeah,
I didn't notice before. And there are people who don't generally like Broadway musicals, but they'll like Hamilton because they like the music or they like history. So some who don't like Broadway, I guess like your husband hasn't been a big Broadway fan. So,
the history element, the wordplay. I mean, it's just ingenious listening to the lyrics of it because you're sitting there going, wow, they got all of these elements and all these nuances. And every time I listen to it, I almost interpret it differently. I actually read an article a little while back that was talking about how Hamilton isn't actually the main character. The argument is that Aaron Burr is the main character. It completely changed how I view it now. Like, I sit there and I'm like, it is. It's about how he pretty much ruined his life. And it was just, every time it's a little more, and you always know something's good when it gives you that type of the ability to revisit and still feel almost like it's new. So right.
I know he addressed that. Why is Aaron Burr the one telling the story when this is about Hamilton? But he mentioned a couple different shows where the antagonist is the one telling the story. Who's telling the story in Jesus Christ Superstar? It's Judas. And there's another example too, where the person who's thought of as the antagonist is the one telling us what happened.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. It's always an interesting angle to come in, because you initially think about the protagonist and how the protagonist is interacting with everything and how they go on their whole journey of whatever's happening. But when it is told by an antagonist point of view, almost, you're able to kind of come in from a different angle. And it's definitely a really interesting way of looking at it, and allows you to really see the nuances. And I think it really does go hand in hand with a lot of storytelling and television of the last, decade that has really focused on the like anti-hero or the villain character as being the main character. And those have been personally among some of my favorites, just because they're so interesting, because they aren't perfect, and it really embraces a more realistic approach to storytelling. I could talk about Hamilton forever. So I'm going to keep going on my list. I watched a lot this week. I watched the entire first season of Away on Netflix. That was Hilary Swank. It's about Hilary Swank. She's an astronaut and she goes on a Mars mission. And it was interesting because I expected there to be kind of more to it. I enjoyed it, but it was pretty much like slice of life on a spaceship. It was like, just basically all the components of what happens when you have to leave your family and you're going up in space and being on the ship for so long and running into problems. And I enjoyed it. I'm really interested to see if they'll make a second season, because I want to see them on Mars now. So watched all of Away. I watched all of Lovecraft Country, like I said, on HBO. I watched the entire first season of Cobra Kai. I was a little late to that bandwagon. But very happy I jumped on, because I was such an obsessed fan of Karate Kid when I was in junior high. So I used to watch those movies over and over and over with one of my best friends. And so I can't believe I didn't watch it earlier, but I really think they've done a really good job in it being kind of like nostalgic, but also its own storyline. And also kind of jumps on the whole antagonist storyline too. So Cobra Kai is a high recommendation. I watched the first few episodes of The Home Edit, which is basically that organizing show. I don't know. Sometimes I liked it, but then sometimes I was like, is this really organizing or displaying things? That was my question to myself sometimes. And then the last thing I watched last night was the This Is Paris documentary on YouTube, which was actually really thought-provoking, surprisingly. I wasn't sure if it was going to be, but it was very thought-provoking and opened my eyes to a lot of abuse in the the private education behavioral development kind of area, and just was very interesting to, often celebrities, you see them as kind of this one flat figure when they're not a flat figure in a story, they're people. And I thought that was a really nice reminder, as well as, I believe I looked it up, but the director of this documentary had full editing power. So Paris Hilton was not allowed to make any changes. She signed away her ability to cut anything out of this documentary. So it really is a full picture of her, who she is kind of as a person, and the things that have formed up on her life. So that is my long list.
I haven't heard of that one, so I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, it's free. So it's free on YouTube. So
cool. What about you, Lynn? What have you been reading?
I have been, do we do like watching, reading, and
listening to? Yeah.
Okay, so I live with my mom, who's in her 80s, but we have found many, many shows to watch this year. We've like watched entire series of shows that we hadn't seen before. We just finished The Crown. I had never watched The Crown before, so I'm really behind on that. But now we've watched the entire, three seasons that are available. Loved that. We've watched some of Away, and we just kept saying, would you really leave? Would you really go to Mars? You have a kid at home. Your husband isn't well, but it is good. So I think we'll continue that. We've also just started watching Grace and Frankie, and we like that a lot. And let's see. I do listen to Hamilton a lot, and Hadestown. I usually have an audiobook I'm listening to, and lately I'm not driving as much, but I still, so it's going to take me longer to finish one, but I listen to a lot of podcasts and audiobooks. Right now I'm listening to The Beekeeper of Aleppo. I assume there will be times during that I will need to pause and listen to something else while I'm driving, so I'm not crying in the car. But it's lovely. It's really, really good. And I listen to a couple favorite podcasts now are 88 Cups of Tea, which is a really great podcast, especially for writers and readers, just fans of books. It's been around a while, but it's a recent discovery for me. So there are plenty of episodes. If you start listening to it and you like it, you'll have a lot of episodes you can catch up on. Great interviews that they do with authors and other publishing people. I also like Ologies with Ali Ward. She's an excellent interviewer, and she finds experts in so many different fields, like some fields you didn't even know existed, and she will interview them, and so then you're kind of an expert on that field now. And she's just fascinated about every field she's interviewing someone about, and you can tell they are so excited to be asked, to have someone asking them about this field of study they've spent their lives on, like moss or deer and things that you like on the surface they don't seem like they would be interesting, and then you listen to it and you go, oh wow, moss is so fascinating. I'm so excited. So that one I love. That's all. There's a new episode of that every Tuesday. So those are a couple favorite podcasts I like listening to. And reading, I've never been a big graphic novel person, but I might be getting into them now. I just got this one, Flamer, by Mike Corrado, and it is gorgeous. It is a novel, but it seems it is, you have it too. Seems like it's probably strongly autobiographical. Mm-hmm. This one, like, it had just arrived, and I came in here to for some other online visit I had. Walked back out to the living room, and my mom said, this was really good. You read the whole thing? And she said, oh yeah, there are a lot of pictures in it, but still, it's a pretty sizable book. Mm-hmm. It's lovely. And she had said that his pain is tangible. It's a wonderful book. And for actual YA novel I'm reading, I have the second of Adib Karam's books. So this is the first I have as a hard copy. Oh. Darius the Great is Not Okay. I'm reading, if I can bring it up here, I'm reading as an ebook the second of those, which is Darius the Great Deserves Better. It's funny and sad, often in the same paragraph, and it's awkward and cringe-inducing, much like being a teenager, all of that together. It's lovely. This one I'm starting a mid-grade. This is my friend Corey Putman Oaks and the second best haunted hotel on Mercer Street. I was so excited to see this because at our writing retreat, we have a writing retreat with about 20 other authors from Houston and Austin. We retreat at a cabin we affectionately call the Lodge of Death, because it's decorated with horrible taxidermy. And of course not this year, we usually go twice a year, but we get a lot done during this 4-day weekend, but it's a lot of fun too. And this is so she had shown us the illustrations for this middle grade novel. So it's fairly heavily illustrated for being a
middle grade novel. And so she had shown us when she had just gotten some of these illustrations, and we were just delighted to see them. So we just saw them on paper as she was getting them, and now to see them in the actual book put together. So it's a fun story too about the hotel that is not the best haunted hotel, but the second best. And so that's been a delight to start that too. So those are, I always have so many at the same time, I feel like, but those are the books that I'm reading for now.
That one looks really cute. I'm going to probably put it on my list, yeah. On my ever-growing list.
It's never ending. It's so long, the list.
Oh, yeah. But I still buy more books. Like I have so many that I haven't read, and I think that's not a terrible habit to have, of all things. You know, we buy too many books and we're not gonna have time to read them all. We'll try.
Aspiring to read, like being surrounded by the stuff you aspire to read, I don't think is a terrible thing.
It's not, yeah.
So, and I mean,
there are worse habits on there.
Yeah, there's totally worse habits. And I mean, obviously me and Farrah work in a library, so I love being surrounded by books. Yeah. So I don't mind. And I obviously will never read the majority of those books on the shelf. So I totally get that. It's a good feeling.
Definitely. But Lynn, you have some titles that Jenny's reading too, right?
I do. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool.
So Jenny will continue interpreting, because it's awkward to try to interpret and then talk at the same time. And so she'll just continue that role as an interpreter now. So she sent me hers. She said, just finished Lost Boy by Christina Henry. Currently reading Please Ignore Vera Deeks by A.S. King. I love that one. Brave Face by Sean David Hutchinson. Have watched or are watching I Am Not Okay With This. I've heard that's really good. I haven't watched it, but I've heard that's good. Also Umbrella Academy and The Crown. Yes, we have some of the same tastes.
Cool. I haven't seen, okay, so I must be the only one that hasn't watched Hamilton yet.
Oh, shame. Well, you need to fix that. Yeah.
Shame. Legit shame. Like, you need to. I was not into, I'm telling you, I ignored Hamilton when it got popular. Mm-hmm. I actually did not listen to the soundtrack. I knew nothing about it before I watched it. And I was only watching it because people have been talking about it for the last several years. I'm totally my husband makes fun of me. He's like, you're such a hipster. I ignore things that are popular on purpose. And I was happy I waited though, because I think the show is done justice by watching it with the original cast. So I do think it's good to finally see it on video.
That was great to see the original cast with it, which you see if you watch it on Disney Plus. So, and it's interesting to see how other people play it if you get to see it on stage, to see the take that each actor does and what they bring to the role. But I love the original cast. By the time I had seen it, I already had the soundtrack memorized. So when I first saw it with my daughter, and I told her, you know, I could sing the entire soundtrack, like everybody's songs. I won't. I'm just letting you know I could.
So. Yeah, I hadn't heard the soundtrack at all when I saw it. I was literally, like, I mean, I knew it was about Alexander Hamilton, because I mean, like, the title, obviously. And that was literally it. I had somehow managed to completely avoid all media, all interviews, all performances.
That's amazing. That's hard.
And yeah. I'm telling you, I think it was my oh, it's popular, I can't be near it. I don't know. But I'm glad, just because I do like kind of seeing the unadulterated version. But it's definitely, if you end up liking it, Farrah, it's the type of thing that you can't get out of your head. I don't know why I keep thinking about it. So
while you guys are talking about it before, I checked to see, so the soundtrack is on Hoopla. So I'm probably going to download the soundtrack. And then I think there's it's a documentary or a movie or something on Hoopla. It's called Hamilton One Shot to Broadway.
Okay. I remember seeing a documentary on PBS about the journey of making the show, how that started.
I think that's probably what it's about.
It's very good.
But I'm definitely downloading the soundtrack. They've got two versions. They've got the parental advisory version and then the other version.
Yeah, there's some moments. I mean, it's not that bad though. Like, it's not that bad. Like,
there are a couple words they had to delete for the Disney broadcast. But you don't miss much by that. There's most of it is there.
Yeah, it's super minor. And I honestly, I did strongly appreciate how Lin-Manuel Miranda, the integration of anytime there was words like that, the integration really added to the method of storytelling and music and everything. It wasn't intentionally overbearing with any sort of the stuff that was edited out. It sounds good either way. And when it's there, it's not the focus is what I'm trying to say.
That's interesting. But yeah, what have I been? Okay, so I don't have a long list at all. I did a couple of picture books. I did, so there's one picture book. It was really, really cute. It's about a girl who moves from Korea and she joins the new school and she has a hard time because she doesn't understand like why the American kids are doing what they're doing. And then they end up, she ends up teaching. So when it comes time for like lunch or snack time or whatever, everybody has like these like really boring lunches. And she brings like all this like cool decorated stuff, like that looks like, you know, kind of like stuff that's in the bento boxes. And her classmates are like, oh my gosh, like, can I try this? And so then they end up having like a parade and she's the leader of the parade. And I think it's called Danby. I don't know, it's kind of hard to see. Oh,
how's it spelled?
It's Danbi, leads the school parade. But super cute. We just got it and it's already on request. So I don't even have a physical copy. Like when I was checking the book and I was like, oh, this looks cute. Let me read this real quick. And then I scanned it and they're like, oh, please send somewhere else. I also read, Pete the Kitty and the Unicorn's Missing Colors. So it's about Pete the Cat when he's a kitty and he, has his friend that's a unicorn and the colors from the unicorn's tails are missing. So they're on a hunt to find these colors. And then Pete's like, you should look around, all around. Like, look, the grass is green. Let's take some color from the grass and let's take some color from this. It was pretty cute. It's a cute way to teach kids color. I'm saving them. And I have one book that I'm reading for school. it's called It's Complicated, The Social Lives of Networked Teens. It's pretty interesting to see the difference, the dramatical difference between why the parents don't want their kids to be on social media and why the kids want to be on social media and what different steps the parents are taking to keep their kids off of social media. And how some are going behind their back and how some are just as scared as their parents are to be on social media. So it's like a good, so I have to read it for school and I have to write a little report on it, like a little, yeah. So I'm heavily focused on that book, guys, right now. So I didn't really have time to read too much else. But I do want to save the best for last. So I just finished this book. And oh my God, this book was like emotionally, like it just got me because it made me feel like I was a part of this book. So it's called We Are Not Free. And it is about a group of teens that are Japanese living in Japantown during the time of Pearl Harbor bombing and how they were all sent to the internment camp. And I did the audiobook and I really enjoyed the way that I want to say all the narrators are I don't know necessarily if they're all from, they're all Japanese, but I would probably say that they're all of Asian descent, which is really nice. And the other thing I really appreciated about this book is that every chapter is a different point of view. So it all has the same over, like the storyline is the same. So you have this big storyline, but each chapter is from a different point, a person's point of view. The cool part is whoever is talking in that chapter, they introduce a new character, and so the next chapter is about that character, is from that character's point of view. And I don't know why, but I just really loved that concept. Anyways, this book is like super, super amazing, and everybody should read it. And there's like really nothing bad I can say about this book, to be honest with you. It's just, it took me on a journey. I felt like I was in the group with them. You know, it starts from when this all happens, and I think the starting character is Minnow, who has two older brothers, and his brother tells him, like, hey, you know what, when you come home from school, make sure you take the bus, like, don't walk to school because I don't want you getting hurt and stuff like that. And he gets distracted. He's a sketcher, and he gets distracted. And then when he gets distracted, he just loses loss of time because he's like sketching all this stuff. And he ends up walking home, and a group of kids come and basically are about to like slash his face, and they beat him up like real bad. And so in there, and there's a group of Chinese boys, and he looks to the Chinese boys to see if they would like help him. And at that time, the way the author was describing it was like the Chinese people were so like annoyed because they would get beat up because people thought that they were Japanese. So they would wear like these little like ribbons or like banner, or, like not banners, but you know, like some kind of like sign or sticker that says, I'm not Japanese, I'm Chinese, or something like that, or I'm Chinese. And those guys just like left, they like ran. But luckily they ran into his like brothers and their friends from Japantown, and they told him like, hey, you know what, this kid is getting beat up over here. So they all come to save him, and they like run away. So that's like the first story. Then it goes on to talk about like how they were evacuated, how they were sent to this like first camp that were like horse stalls, and then how they had to fill out this questionnaire. And some of the teens are like, you get to see like what each one is going through. Like some of them are not happy, but they're very optimistic. Some of them are like downright trying to take their anger out on anybody and everybody, and they don't care if it's like Caucasian or Japanese or whoever it is, they're just beating everybody up. And so you get to like to see the some of the stuff that they're going through. Some of their parents are overprotective, some parents don't like care, some parents like beat their kids, some parents like it was just, it's just like a hit and miss. And then there's like this questionnaire that they're supposed to write, like if they like they're supposed to survey, and the people who say yes, that they'll forget about their Japanese culture and heritage, stay at this camp and get to kind of get in back into their normal routine. And the people that say no get sent to another camp, and they were doing like they were super mean to them and beating them up. And so you get to see some of these kids' stories like split. Some of them stay over here and the others go over there, and some of them join the army. And it's just, it was amazing. Like, I would definitely say, please, everybody, read this book.
Well, it sounds like a really impactful one.
Yeah, like I was so emotionally, like, not drained, but like so emotionally invested. That like when I finished this book this morning, I on my ride to work, I was sad, and I was sad for like, I felt like I lost my friends. I was sad because I like lost my friends, and I was sad because like all of this happened, and I was just sad for like so many like reasons. This has happened to me before too, like when I was reading the Wings of Fire series, and which is like a kid's like juvenile fiction. And when at the ending, I just was so sad, and I wanted to continue the series. But luckily, this book is so far as a standalone. And but it was great to see, because they ended the book with the first person that whose story it was too, and that Minnow, and he was coming back to Japantown and how he was trying to get back into his old life, but he's like, I don't have a life here anymore. So it was cool to see all of that. Yes, everybody just go read it. Like, I'm not doing it justice, I promise you.
I always feel like that when I'm explaining the storyline of a book. I'm like, this doesn't even make sense. I always feel just, you know, like I'm not, like not doing it justice.
As far as watching, I'm not watching anything, but at my house, they're still watching Hannibal and they're like super obsessed with it. I think they're already on season 2, and like my sister-in-law watches it on her own, and my husband watches it on his own, and they like talk about episodes, and he's like, no, don't say it, I'm not on that episode yet. And so they're like hardcore watching it. That's pretty much it. I think I'm almost caught up on the Supernatural podcast. I fell behind, and then everybody was asking me, did you hear this one, and I was like, no. So I caught up yesterday on the Supernatural podcast, and I think I just have like the newest episode to go. So that's pretty much it for me. I know, I told you it's like a short list, but I like spent a long time talking about that book because it was so good.
Well, obviously it's worth it for somebody to read it, because seeing you that excited about it means it must have been good. Although I did laugh a little when you said it was multiple perspectives and you listened to it.
I know. I always say I hate listening to books that have like different points of view, but this one was so good.
You might change your tune the same way I did about audiobooks in general.
Oh, yeah, I probably will. I really enjoyed this one for sure. Like, I would probably say this is one of the top ones for 2020 for me.
Well, it's probably time to wrap up. So I want to remind viewers and listeners to check out the One Book Project this year. Check out our events. Check out all of the titles that you can read, particularly Song for a Whale. It really was a wonderful read, and I really immensely enjoyed it myself, and I know Farrah did as well. And so we highly recommend, if you are interested, to check out the title from the library or purchase the title through one of the local bookshops. It is a perfect way to get younger audiences in on this year's themes. And we encourage everybody to join the discussion. So check it out, participate, join the discussion. One Book Project goes all the way through about mid-November. So there's plenty of time between now and then to get involved, especially considering you can't do as much. So you got time. Sure. So get involved. Go to the website at kcl1book.org, and pretty much it on my end. That's my spiel.
Thank you, Lynn and Jenny, for joining us. I really enjoyed, I'd probably say this is the first time that I've personally been, what's the right word? Like, is interpreted the right word? Interpreted? I've never been interpreted
before. Oh, but you've had someone interpret.
Yeah, so this is cool.
Cool. Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for having us. I'm so glad we could connect. I miss having events in person and visiting schools and libraries and bookstores, but I'm glad we could connect online for now. That's the next best thing until we can get back to something more like normal
and
real people again.
Yeah, but it's cool to like even, because, you know, with everybody being so far away, so it's nice to even have this. Like, I never really thought about this like pre-pandemic, so this is like,
It's nice that anyone anywhere can join in, so that's that's the good thing about it. There's so much online, there are so many events, and wherever you are, you can find something.
For sure.
Absolutely. Well, I guess goodbye.
Yeah. Bye, everybody. Well, see you guys next week.